You're listening to the Run the Riot podcast, where we talk about all things ultra running. I'm your host, David Terrio, and man, I'm pumped that you are here. Let's see what we can get into today. Hey there, my friends. Welcome to another episode of the Run the Riot podcast. Today, I've got two guests. They are husband and wife, Mike and Sandra Smith. And if you've run any sort of, if you've run races kind of all over the place, you probably ended up running with Mike. At the time of the interview, Mike had run 215 100-mile races. That blows my mind. 215. And his wife has crewed a bunch of them. Man, we had a blast just talking about the mindset it takes, talking about just all the races, his favorite races. Just really got to know them. I'd been at races with Mike before, but never really got to visit with him. And his lovely wife, Sandra, she has supported him in this, and she is a crew master. She is good at crewing, and so she even wrote a book about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about her book, and I'll have the link in the show notes if you want to check that book out. But great conversation, totally enjoyed it, and I'm just blown away at what Mike has done and continues to do. I think when we talked, he had done 4 more 100-milers in the last, 5 weeks. Yeah, crazy. He's still doing them, and he's 66 years old. I love it. I love the drive. I love the potential. I love that he's still doing what he loves. Real quick, before we get started, you know, when you get, especially for me, after lunch, when you get kind of just groggy, your brain doesn't work, and you need a nap, and you can't really get one because you're at work. Well, I don't know about you, but that's me. That's me. After lunch, I get sleepy. But what I found is this cool product called Magic Mind. And it's a small bottle. I have it in my hand right now. You can't see that because this is an audio podcast. But it's a small bottle. It's got all natural ingredients, and you sip on it, and it helps give you mental energy, focus. It improves my coffee, you know, like if I have coffee after I eat lunch, it enhances it. And I just feel like I'm more productive, less stress and anxiety, more creative. And it just helps me with my memory. And, you know, dude, as we get older, we need help with our memory. But like I said, it has all natural ingredients. It's got matcha, ashwagandha, lion's mane, cordyceps, and other naturally sourced products. No sugar. It's nut-free. It's vegan. It's keto. It's paleo-friendly. It's great. And so I want to encourage you to check it out. Go to magicmind.com/run the riot. Yeah, magicmind.com/run the riot. And if you do decide to buy this and check it out, which I highly recommend, use the code RIOT, R-I-O-T, 20. Riot 20, and you get 56% off. Decide to sign up for the subscription. Check it out. www.magicmind.com/run the riot. All right. Now let's talk to Mike and Sandra Smith about running a bunch of 100-mile races. I am excited. Today on the Run the Riot podcast, we've got Mike and Sandra Smith. Welcome to the podcast, you guys.
Thanks.
Well, I've been looking forward to this. You guys are so busy, and we had trouble getting this scheduled. So when we got it nailed down on the calendar, I was pumped up, and because I think we've got a lot to talk about. And normally, like with a lot of people who run some races, we start going through all the races that they've run. But Mike has run over 200 100-mile races on his Ultra sign up. I think it says 332 right now. Yeah, we're not going to get to all the races that you've run.
Good.
Yeah. Do you remember all the races that you've run?
Oh, bits and pieces here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thank you guys for taking the time to join me on the podcast. And I guess we'll start, you know, the best place to start, the beginning. So Mike, how did you get into this sport, man? How long have you been running these races?
Okay, so I guess it depends on which one of the kinds of races we're talking about. But my dad was a runner in the 60s when a lot of people weren't running for just recreation. He was, and kind of a fitness nut. So he would drag us kids out to the track with him. And he wasn't doing anything longer than probably 10 miles or so on occasion. But we would run around the track with him on occasion. I did not do any running in grade school, high school. I was a swimmer in high school. So really came back to running probably in the early 80s. I had a friend who was deploying overseas at that time, and he was running to stay in shape. So I started running with him and probably did my first 5K in the early 80s. So kind of got into it late, and that led to some 10Ks and eventually to a marathon and 50 states and continents for the marathons. And then,
Wow.
That kind of moved on to the ultra distance. We had a group of 50 staters who wanted to do some longer distances. So we tried a 50 miler and then kind of stumbled into the 100 milers.
Nice, nice. So where are you from originally?
Memphis.
Memphis. All right. And Sandra, where are you from?
Well, I grew up in the Air Force, so my first 5 years was spent in a few different states, but starting at age five, from Fort Walton Beach, Florida.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay, good deal, good deal. So you started running these 5Ks, you started doing all, you know, the races and stuff, and it sounds like you did like a lot of people. You drank the Kool-Aid, and then you just kind of kept moving forward, there's a 10K. All right. There's a 10K there's yeah. And then to do the 50 states and then the continents, that's, I had no idea. I didn't know you did that. So is that in your personality when you decide to start doing something that did that show up previously as you were growing up that you just kind of kept doing stuff and trying to see how far you could push it? Or did that develop when you started running? Did you just kind of fall in love with it? And
probably when I started running, I can't pinpoint any other thing athletically. Like I did some 1 mile events when I was swimming, but nothing really what you consider ultra distance in the swimming world, mostly sprints. So no, I can't think of anything that I really got too wrapped up in, pushing it out too far until I really got into the running.
Okay. Okay. So you started running, you doing all these, the marathons because you fell in love with the marathon distance. That's kind of like, you know, a common story. I did a bunch before I started doing ultras and when did you guys meet? Where Sandra, where did you fall into this craziness?
Gosh, we were both working at, Montgomery Ward in Mobile, Alabama. And,
okay.
When Mike and I met, he wasn't running, you know,
okay.
I think we worked all the time. We didn't have time to have any running. So his running career really started a lot later than when we first met. We've been married almost 44 years now. So,
oh, that's awesome.
The first,
congratulations.
That's great. There was no running involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very little.
So, yeah. So you didn't sign up for that. I tell my wife, I say, you knew what you were signing up for when you married me, because I was running already. But
I didn't know what I was signing up for. And even when I signed up for it, I didn't know what I was signing up for.
Yeah. It grew. It got, yeah. Well, what did you think about, like, so he starts running and when he starts, you know, the marathons, okay? Because doing a marathon is one thing, but then deciding to run all 50 states, and doing all the continents, you know, from your perspective, what did you think about that?
I thought it was great. You know, it's a great way to see the United States for sure. And
nice.
Then when he started doing, actually when he, finished the states, I said, so what now, are you going to go run on the moon? And he goes, what do you think about Antarctica? I went, I'm in.
I love it. So, I love it.
So even though I'm not a runner, I love the travel side of his running. That's really my favorite part.
Oh, that's cool. So I love that. So you just kind of embraced it and said, you know, I'm going to support him in his running and get to travel. Now, I guess you were young with the Air Force and stuff, but did you do a lot of traveling before? So you're just like, now I get to travel more, or you just, this was your opportunity to let's go see some stuff.
We didn't travel that much. We're both scuba divers. So, you know, our big thing, we take a big dive trip every year, and that was about it. You know, I'd take my you know, when you're working, you're counting vacation days. So
yeah.
I normally do a long dive trip, and that left me about a week's worth of vacation to, you know, parse out for the rest of the year. So we didn't do a lot of travel back then. And then when he started doing these marathons, the company that he worked for, you know, he traveled a lot for that. So he goes, oh, I'm going to be in, you know, Pasadena. Let's see what kind of marathon is in that area. And so I think he managed to work a lot of that around his business trips, which really helps on the financial side of running. If your company is sending you there for work and you can throw in a marathon that weekend.
Yeah. That was kind of what I was going to ask. If you guys were working and, you know, to be able to travel and do all 50 states and then to, you know, the continents, how long did it take you to get all 50 states when you decided to set that as a goal?
I did my first marathon at Disney in 95 and didn't do another marathon until 96 in Disney again. Then I started doing a few marathons a year, but really picked it up probably around 2000 because I finished the 50 states in fall of 2002, I think.
Okay.
So
all
in. 7 years, but pretty slow start at it those first few years.
You ramped it up.
Yeah. I can't remember what the last continent was. I think New Zealand.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So Australia, New Zealand, we did the Auckland Marathon. And that was probably 2012, 2013, somewhere in that area.
So, yeah. Oh man, that's cool. That's a cool goal. I need to get my wife to sign up for that. You know, so it's because you know what a way. I mean, New Zealand's. It's funny you mentioned that because we're big Lord of the Rings fans, and we want to go there. I want to go to Hobbiton and do all the Lord of the Rings tours and stuff. So go run a race and then see all that area.
That's what we did, you know, schedule a race and then work a tour, you know, before it, after it. It's nice. One of the prettiest places you'll ever see.
Oh man, that's fantastic. So you guys are, so you're signing up, you're doing all these races, you're working and stuff. Mm-hmm. When you discovered, you did the 50, you discovered a 50 mile race. Now, you know, marathons are all on the road. You're doing all these roads everywhere. Were you running like other trail races and things in the meantime? Or did that happen when you started, you know, when you discovered like ultras and like 50 mile, did you say, oh, I really like trails or something? How did that happen?
Mostly on the road, like you said. There was a couple that just to get a marathon in a state, we might have to do a trail marathon somewhere. So that was the only trail running. Did a little bit of training. So I was living in Indiana at the time and was doing some training on trails, but wasn't serious about the trail running yet. And then Sunmart, and they don't have that race anymore, 50 miler in Huntsville, Texas, was the first true trail race that I did, first ultra also. And so we certainly ran on trails then, but I didn't know anything about the conditions on the trails. I was probably running in road shoes and just hoping to get through it.
So how did you do on, you know, when you go from, you know, you're almost twice the distance now on running 50 miles. So how did you respond to that? I know you had a lot under your belt, so, you know, you can run, but how did you do?
Pretty well, again, and I credit it to not knowing any better because I just ran it like I would a marathon. And I think I ran about 9 hours for that 50.
Nice.
And only because I didn't know maybe we should be walking these hills right now. You know, the nutrition, the even the hydration was all a guessing game at that point. So
just
a little faster because I was probably just trying to do it like a road race.
Yeah. What year was that around roughly?
Sunmart, I think, was 98, maybe 99.
Okay.
Yeah, probably 99 because Umstead was 2000 and jumped up to the 100 there pretty quickly. So
that was your, so I was going to ask, your first 100 was Umstead in 2000?
Yes.
All right.
Sure. 2000. Yep.
All right. So, That's so you've gotten to see my first 100 miler, my first ultra was actually the Cajun Coyote. I think you ran it when it was Cajun Coyote, and you've done Loup-Garou. Yeah. I've done it both ways too. That was my backyard. I did a lot of training on those trails.
I remember, I think I did six of those Cajun Coyote races. There's been a lot of miles out there between those and Loup-Garou for sure.
Oh yeah, I bet, man. And so, but since 2013 to now, man, there are so many races to choose from, so many 100 milers all over the place. So I bet, I mean, you starting around 2000, I bet you've really seen the growth of the sport and how do you pick the races you run? I notice you do runs you like and people you like and you go back to them, but how do you decide what you're going to do next?
Yeah, that's a good question. The 100 milers when I started, and really the only resource that I knew of at the time for finding the races was probably Stan Jensen's site, run100.com.
Yeah, and big spreadsheet.
yeah. I would look at Stan's site, and I think we had all of maybe, I didn't even think it was 30. 100 wow. milers at that point in time. So it wasn't a whole lot to choose from. And I was primarily focused on the 100. I mean, I did some other 50s, JFK and a man was out here and some other 50s, but mostly I was kind of already taken with the 100 mile distance and really wanted to focus on those. Really liked Umpstead. So you're right. I picked some races that I'd want to go back to, and Edie's race, Loup-Garou is the same thing. But I was trying to do some different hundreds too. And I would come out west here. Again, I was living in Indiana until 2016. So I would still come out west. Pretty quickly jumped into Badwater in 2002. So was used to, and that's road. So it wasn't really trail, but got used to the distance a little more and started adding some other hundreds after that. Wanted to get into Hard Rock and Western States, obviously. So. Started trying to get through those lottery processes. But I like to pick different ones too. You know, there's a few I like to go back to, but like this past 2 weeks ago, I guess, was Orcas Island. Never been on that island and run that 100. That's a really great, neat race out there. So I really do like to pick some different ones out there and try to do those different states.
Yeah. So what was it about, you know, you did all these, and it's pretty funny, like on your ultra signup, I was kind of looking, and of course you got to scroll a whole lot to look at it, but I was looking and I saw these other races, and then you hit the 100, and then you, there were some others in between, but then you just kind of like, it's hundreds, you know. What was it about the 100 mile distance that captured you? Like what, you know, I don't know. How did you fall in love with it?
Yeah, I think the ultra distance in general, especially 50 miles and above, but the hundreds in particular, you know, I've never been a really fast runner. So it gave me a chance to really figure out, you know, sometimes it's not the fastest people that are able to finish the hundreds. It does take some logistics and some planning that is not required, obviously, in a road race. Yeah, you have to learn some lessons about nutrition, hydration, running overnight.
Yeah.
And trust me, I'm not somebody you want to ask about training for 100.
That's on my list.
kind of just being able to finish one. I've been pretty lucky at that. Last year wasn't great. Had a few DNFs there, but usually the attraction to me is if there's particularly a good race director and group of volunteers there, that's always nice to have. But seeing some of the same folks out there and just I think the process of picking the race and talking to people about crewing for you and getting to know the other racers, if there's any there that you know already, that's great. But you really get a chance to know people a lot better during an ultra distance event, and particularly anything 100 miles and above, I think.
Nice. Yeah. And it's pretty amazing the relationships that you know you create, especially when you're back and forth and I lost you.
Well, we lost you for a second.
And we're back. I don't know what happened. Can you hear me?
We've got you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. I think there's a little bit of a delay, but we'll figure it out. Okay. Yeah, I get. Yeah, hopefully it's not too much of a delay. But so what I love about the trails and what I love about ultra running is the relationships that you make, the people you encounter. You know, you suffer together with somebody else, and there's a bond there. You know, fact, one of the posts when I asked for questions and I told them I was interviewing, you know, you guys, was Mark Hinn, who's somebody I've run with. We've been on some kind of teams together with Ultra, and he posted he met you and he's running alongside of you, and he asked the question like, "Hey, you ever run Umstead?" And he said it was like he slowly pulled out, you know, you weren't bragging or you said, "Yeah, I've run it." And he said, "Oh, how many times?" Because he was thinking about going, and I think you've run it like in the teens times or something, you know. And he was anyway, he was just talking about how it was really cool to get to know you, and he realized like, who is this guy? You know, this guy's just run some races, but you see, you never know who you're going to meet on the trail, whether it's somebody running their first ultra or you're running with Mike Smith. you have since, I know it's over 200. How many 100-milers have you run?
As of last weekend, 215.
Oh man, you see my little, I think I've done 17 of 200 of 100 or more, and yeah. I've got a few buckles up there, but like I'm humbled, man. Like that's no, it's really, really amazing. So you
he
fell in love
four in the last 5 weeks.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. that's wild. So here's, you know, you fell in love with this 100-mile distance, and are you both still working when you really started cranking up these 100-milers? No, you okay?
For the first 100 I finished, I was working because I can remember I was pretty much retiring as I did that 100th at Umstead. That was okay. 2016.
Okay.
So what I've done since then, I've done 115, I guess, since then. So that's the last 8 years, almost 8 years. So.
Okay, so let's go to you're running 100s between the year 2000 and 216. You guys are still working. How did you figure out your place in this, and how often were you able to jump in and crew and travel for these 100-milers? Like what's going through your mind when, you know, this crazy distance and he's out there running it? How did that work out?
Well, I quit working in 2005. So
okay.
Up until 2005, I really didn't crew for him very often. It might be, you know, a race a year, maybe two. Okay. Especially if it's a good location like Colorado.
Yeah,
I was
living
in Louisiana at the time, and going to Colorado in the summer is a whole lot better than summer in Louisiana.
I'm with you.
And then after that, it was really easy for me to fit in.
Okay.
And he's pretty good. You know, he'll go, "Hey, what do you have going on last weekend in April?" You know, so he's learned, you know, he wants me to be there to crew for him. We got to sync our schedules, and we have a pretty good method of getting that done.
Nice.
But I think I was very lucky. I had a good group of friends I was in Indiana for about 18 years, and I had a good group of friends there. A lot of them would crew, pace, even do the race with me. I had one friend out of Chicago, Beth, that I don't know how many hundreds we actually ran together, and her husband's really, at the time, was a really good 100-miler too. So I had a, you know, backup crew and pacers for a lot of those races. And if I didn't, I just worked it out where I checked out the logistics and made sure I could do it on my own, that had enough drop bag locations and aid stations that I thought I could get through it. So,
Yeah. When, how many did you, you started doing them? When did you have the goal that, hey, I'm going to try to do 100 milers, or did you just keep running them until you realized that it was a thing?
Yeah. I tell you what, I couldn't pinpoint a day, probably as I've got 70 or 80 races done, somewhere in that range, probably I thought, okay, there's still a possibility of finishing them, but never started with that goal. It was just, and it was a slow start because I did one Umpstead race. It was a year later that I did the next Umpstead.
Yeah.
No hundreds in between there. So not a very fast start at it. I wasn't quite sure whether I was ready to switch over from the marathons and was still trying to finish some goals there. So,
yeah.
Can't pinpoint a year in there, but probably I had to start paying attention because I wanted to make sure Umpstead was my 100th. So
oh,
I had
nice.
To start paying attention to the scheduling and the timing. And if I didn't finish a race, I had to add another race. And
that's pretty good. I like that. I guess it being your first, I haven't run Umpstead, but I know some people that have. It has a special place in your heart. Is it because of that, or is it the people, or what's good about it? Brag on Umpstead.
Highly recommend Umpstead. Just a great group of people. I'm on my second and third race director there over the years now. This will be 23 years I've done
wow.
it in April this year. And it's just a great group of people. Rhonda and Chris are the race directors now. It's not a particularly difficult race, but I tell people 100 miles is 100 miles. You know, you go out there and it's a looping course. We do, they're going to have to alter the course a little bit this year, but I think typically it's 12.5 mile loops 8 times. And those are challenging for some people. I know some people that don't enjoy the looping courses because it's easy for them to drop. You're running by your vehicle, literally at Umpstead, that you can park along the course.
Yeah.
And you're running by your vehicle and your crew 8 times to, yeah. to some people. They'll also let you take a 50-mile finish there, which encourages some people, I think, to drop at 50 at times. So it's a challenge, but I would recommend it highly, especially for those folks who want to get a 100-mile finish. They pride themselves on getting people through their first 100-mile there.
I love it. I love it. When that's, you know, you talk about loop course, my first was at Cajun Coyote and, you know, that's 5 20-mile loops. And, I had to get my head around it, you know, and I ran that course a lot in training. So I would go do it twice on a Saturday and stuff. But, Edie sent me an email that really helped me where she talked about my headspace, you know, your first loop, just have fun, enjoy it, take it easy. Second loop, third loop's going to be tough, but you know, just having your head that you'll be more than halfway done when you're finished. And, you know, and anyway, and that's how I did, you know, like any ultra, especially 100 milers and above, you got to just kind of wrap your mind around the next piece, you know, and just, you know, not embrace the whole, you know, the whole thing because it'll mess up your head. Yeah.
Well, we tell each other a lot of times, it's just get to the next aid station.
Yeah. 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 Just get to the next one. So Sandra, you started, you're crewing, you're doing that. And, how many, I guess, out of these 215 100 milers, how many do you think you've crewed?
I think the best I can tell, around 130, 140, somewhere in there. Some of them, it's been so long ago. I don't know. Was that the bear or was that, you know, they kind of all run together. So probably more than anyone else in the world. Let me put it that way.
That's pretty amazing. I'm going to let my wife know that. We're still working. And so, you know, we do the planning thing and she's like, can we do a vacation that's not running? And we do, but you know,
had that same conversation with him. Can we do a vacation with nothing involved?
It's like, well, we've got to travel there anyway. What? Might as well run.
Be a race about this, huh? Yeah.
It's the efficient thing to do. It's the studious thing to do. We're being a good steward of our finances by running while we're there. But so in crewing all this, man, I love that you you know, that it's a team effort and that you wrote a book. So how did your crewing evolve over, you know, over this time? Like, what you're doing now compared to when you first started? Like, how does that look? How's it changed?
Well, when I first started, I was absolutely clueless. You know, I how hard can it be? I remember asking myself, how hard can it be?
Yeah, my wife will laugh at that too.
Really hard.
Yes.
And so I don't go to a race that I don't learn some little lesson when I'm crewing. Hmm. And they're not as frequent as they used to be, but, you know, understanding what you're getting into in terms of terrain conditions, potential weather situations, what kind of supplies I'll have, what kind of vehicle I need, how often I'm going to see him, how long it takes for me to drive to an aid station. There are some races that, you know, I have equipment that I spend the night out in the truck. You know, yeah. I like camping. Mike doesn't like camping, but I like it. And so for me, instead of driving 80 miles back at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'd just rather inflate my bed in the back of the truck and sleep in there, you know?
Nice.
So, you know, taking the lessons from every race and, you know, getting that in your thought process when you get ready for the next one is, does any of this apply? What's unique about this race? Are there any, you know, where I used to spend a lot of time reading blogs and Facebook pages and anything I could find, especially yeah. a race we've never been to. And I do that now. If it's a race we've never been to, I try to find out as much as possible. And still, like, you know, Orcas Island, when we went to that, that was the first time. And there's still this sort of anxiety that I have about, okay, is this all going to work? And what if things go wrong? And you know, you can only plan so much. And after you figured out your plan, then it comes down to reacting to what goes right and what goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Mike, have you come to, I don't know, does it help you to know that she's there waiting? And, you know, have you come to it, you know, I don't know, you have more peace and like you rely on her when she's there. It just makes your race run much better.
Definitely. From
good answer.
Yeah, coordinating what I'm doing in an aid station, and it can be the difference, David, in me taking 10 minutes in an aid station versus having to take 20 minutes because I'm changing shoes and socks and clothes. And if somebody's kind of in advance, got all that prepped and ready for me and ready to do it, and sometimes your hands are so cold that you really can't do some fine things that you need to be doing with your hands at that point. And it just helps to have somebody crewing for you there. And obviously, from a nutrition standpoint, I'm a runner that really likes to have real food out there. Mm. And when Sandra can bring me a chicken pot pie or a hamburger or a hot dog, or that's just great. That's just yeah. great, because aid stations do the best they can. But at times, you know, it's a little less going on there as far as hot food and things that you particularly like to yeah. eat at that point in time. So I would just say makes things a heck of a lot easier. At the same time, I'll tell you though, we're careful. So most of these meetings occur at aid stations, a lot of them with drop bags. We learned early on that I'll still have everything I need in that drop bag and not count on her getting there with it.
Yeah.
So that would be something I'd put out there for folks is have a crew. It's nice to have your crew there, but be ready to be self-reliable, I guess.
That's in the book.
Yeah. That's in the book. Yeah. Okay. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, when things go wrong, you know, if you've got his drop bag and, you know, we were at a race last year that I was held up for over an hour by cows and
so, that's great.
You can't plan to be held up by cows.
Yeah.
So he always has everything he needs to keep going, just in case something happens, whether it's cows, I'm lost, you know, whatever.
So I was going to ask, Mike, how many times has she left you high and dry at an aid station?
It's happened. This many races, it's had to have happened quite, you know.
If I had a guess, I would say 12 to 15 times.
Well, that's
not bad.
I would say
that's not bad. Yeah. No, that's fantastic.
Yeah, those were at the same race, you know. It's just like everything went to hell in that race. But my idea of being on time is to be early in anything. I'm just a habitually early person. Yeah. So for when I figure out what's going on with his pace chart, I always allow at least an hour before I think he might get there. And there have been times when, you know, I get there, I get set up and go, okay, now I'm going to read my book for an hour, and here he comes, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You never know.
You just never know. Yeah. I'm notorious.
I don't listen too often, but everyone I do just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Unless it's something like cows that you can't plan for.
Yeah. And that's just the way it is. And here's the other question. So I was going to ask Mike that. And so Sandra, how well does Mike keep a positive demeanor at you know, when you see him at aid stations? Is he he seems like a pretty positive guy. Does he stay pretty positive when he's running all these races?
Mike is very even keeled and positive. I'd say I give him a 98% rating. You know, there's always that 2%, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody's perfect.
and I know if I were in some of the conditions that he has raced in, you wouldn't see me being nice to anybody. I'd be in my car going home. Well, he's, you know, at his worst, he's kind of terse, and I've learned not to let that hurt my feelings. But
good.
You know, he usually comes in, encouraging other racers, thanking the volunteers, and just a great mental attitude there.
That's good. So some of the racers, some of the athletes that I coach, I've had meetings with their crew before to prepare, especially when it's like this their first 100-miler and their crew is like their family. And so I talk to them and about, okay, they might say some stuff, you know, they might act a certain way. Don't take it personally. Like, realize right now, just say, okay, be positive, try to get them to, next aid station. And it's always been funny to talk to them afterwards, and they're like, oh, I'm so glad that you told us that. And the runner's like, you told them what? That's why they were being so nice when I was being a turd. You know, it's like,
we were at the Javelina last year, and this runner came in, and I don't know if this was her husband or boyfriend who was crewing for her, but he got her drop bag. He was sitting like 12 feet from where she was coming in, but she didn't see him when she came in, and she started beating him over the head with a water bottle. I told you not to move my drop bag. I'm going, holy cow, I've never seen runner abuse like that. I mean, crew abuse like that before. She was crying. She was so upset that he touched her drop bag. And I thought, why do you have him here? But
kidding.
Personality changes can be a thing in an ultra.
Yeah. Well, my wife, when she crewed me for Tahoe, she said she saw somebody treating their crew like that. And she said, you better never treat me like that. You know, it's like she said, I will leave you.
We don't pay him enough to take that kind of treatment.
Yeah, I told Mike, you're mean to me, I'm just home.
Yeah, you got this. You're going to do this drop bags the rest of the time. But it is fantastic to have, especially like, okay, so just for an example, we're going to talk about, I love Edie and Lou Garou. That's my people, And so like just that race. So I've run it in so many different conditions I'm sure you have too, because I didn't even count. You probably run that quite a few times, that course between Coyote and Lou Garou. So, but just that it's in December. Sometimes it'll be kind of warm and muggy. Sometimes it'll be, I've saw snow the first time I ran it. I'm running, I thought I was hallucinating at night. And I was like, no, it's snow flurries. I was like, okay, in South Louisiana, let's go, but it helps to have, somebody there, a crew to help you make those decisions, pivot, make sure you're dressing right, make sure you're eating right and drinking according to the conditions, because, when you're out there that long, I don't know, maybe you probably got it down pretty good, but I can get a little poor on decision management.
Well, there's been, like I said, some really tough weather years. We did 1 year. I don't know how long we ran in the rain there.
The whole time. It was like a semi-tropical storm that came into South Louisiana. And we were in Louisiana 5 days, and it never stopped raining. And he came into the pavilion there, and he's just like shaking uncontrollably. I'm going, you just need to quit. This is ridiculous. He said the water was like thigh high and it was cold. And
yeah,
like, you need to quit. You just need to quit. It's weird. I'm the one telling him he needs to quit. And yeah, he's going, no, I'll get warm if I keep moving. And he kept moving and he finished that race. But the conditions were horrid that year.
Yeah, it happens. And you know, like when you compare times, people's times and races and all that stuff, when you're trying to figure out difficulty, you've got to take into consideration the weather, whether it's a hot year, cold, you know, and all that. So, you can read, and that's why it's important. Like Sandra, that's great that you go and read the blogs, because you'll read, you know, somebody hit the good weather year and everything's great and, you know, warm fuzzies, unicorns and rainbows and, you know, and, but then you read somebody else's and it's like, it was a monsoon. We almost died.
Right.
Then you just have to be ready. And I guess, you know, like for a newer race is like Orcas Island that you guys went to, there's probably, you know, you probably could read some things, but it's fairly new if I recall. And so there's not a whole lot. You just gotta, and then you're flying there, I guess. So you gotta figure out what you can bring and what you can't bring and just try to make smart decisions.
And it's the kind of place that the weather can be all over the board.
Yeah.
And Mike did this race in Mississippi this weekend. Tell me about your swimming at the race in Mississippi this weekend.
I saw some of those pictures out there, man. Yeah. Tell me about those creek crossings, Mike.
Well, I've done that 50 there, I guess, probably 9 times. And so Dennis started the 100, not this year, but last year, and run it both years. And normally, have you ever done the Mississippi 50? Have you been on that course?
I have not. No, I haven't.
Okay. Would recommend it highly. Again, he does a good job there, and he's got a good setup. Again, a looping course. We do a 12.5-mile loop 7 times, and then we do a shorter 6-mile loop. So there's typically some water crossings that you're going to get your feet maybe up to your calves, and if it's rained anytime recently.
Yeah.
But they had pretty much a downpour there. It's a noon start, and we got up that morning and looked outside, and it was just pouring. I mean, it was frog strangling rain and
for hours.
So yeah, the creek crossings that would have typically been worst case at your knees were actually up to our necks, and some people were, and I did have to swim a little bit, not so much the depth, but the current and the depth.
Yeah, made it work.
Your footing. So you'd be doing a little bit of swimming. My swimming background really came in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You go multi-sport.
A little breaststroke out there, but you know, it just was runoff from all the rain just built up, and Dennis got some ropes across those crossings. So it definitely wasn't something you would have envisioned having to do during the middle of a 100-miler, but
in Mississippi.
In Mississippi,
I tell people, David, is those are the races you'll really remember.
Yeah.
You know?
Make good stories. Well,
I jumped in and did a little volunteering at that race, and most of the runners coming in were going, this is going to make some great stories. There's only one guy who said, I nearly died twice on that loop. And Dennis encouraged him, if you're worried about the safety of it, you shouldn't go back out. And he ate, he drank, and he goes, maybe the water will be lower this time. I'm going back out.
Yeah, there you go. That's ultra running, man. You just regroup and go. That's right. And ultra swimming, I guess, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, you know, I was looking through, and you said, so I have to say this, and I don't know, did you, you did run Western States, right?
A couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah. The last time was part of the Grand Slam, I think, in 2014. And really, that's the only reason I probably did states that year, is because I wanted to finish the slam.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I saw the slam combined time that was up there. And I want to ask Sandra something when she comes back. I know she got up because my wife, she's crewed me quite a few times. And she said one of the toughest races to crew was Western States because of some of the places she had to drive and stuff.
David, she's out of earshot right now. Don't ask her about that. She hates screwing that race.
Oh, really? Okay.
She hates it. She'll tell you why. But it's probably the drive time and the restrictions on the crew. They're pretty sensitive about what crew can do, and so it's not her favorite.
Yeah. So I think my wife heard me talking. She's in the window door right here, like got her ear up against it. She heard me talking about her crewing Western States. So she's like, and she's making a face. So, there she is. So Sandra, heard that you, just love crewing Western States. I heard it is your favorite, you just like get pumped up and you're excited and you love crewing it.
Yeah, you heard that, did you? Yeah. It's a fine race for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I find the crewing difficult. The aid station, anytime I have to rely on another form of transportation to get to an aid station, like I've got to be somewhere to catch this shuttle to get me to the aid station, that just adds another layer of complexity to it that I don't like.
Yeah.
And then my least favorite races are races that have lots and lots of people in them. That when you experience an ultra run, that has 50 people in it or a couple hundred, and that you really kind of get into the vibe of it. That's a lot more fun than when you're with 800 people, 2,000 people, these big races. So it's nothing against the Western States race at all. But it's not the kind of crewing that I enjoy.
Well, it's the nature of it. And the reason I brought it up is because my wife, she's crewed me quite a few times, and she's crewed me at like Moab 240 and the Tahoe 200. And she said, I prefer those compared to Western States. She said, I can't. Western States is so hard to crew. And so that's why I had to bring it up, because to see if it was just her or if you would agree with that.
Yeah, I really need to learn to get my busy doing something on the days that you can enter the Western States lottery, so we don't even have to worry about that anymore.
Just get him occupied.
Luckily, it's a long time between getting into that one. So.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I got in with two tickets, when I got to run it, and then we'll see if I ever get in again. So, looks like you guys froze up a little bit. Okay, I got you again.
Yep. Yeah, you look good now.
All right. Cool. All right. So, Mike, I hadn't even brought this up before, because we talked about you working and retiring and everything. But just so people know, like you're 66 years old. You're there? Hey guys, you wanting to run all the miles? You wanting to run all the races? You wanting to cruise through those 100-mile? Well, let's just be honest. We don't cruise through 100-mile races. They are hard. But you feel like you need a little guidance. You need some help. Well, I've got some help for you. Run the Riot podcast and coaching can help you. If you are interested in getting a coach to help you run all the races, go ahead and check out www.runtheriot.run and click on that coaching page, and you'll see that it's myself, David Terrio, and we just brought on Chad Hetrick, who won second place in Arkansas Traveler. He's got his certification, and he is looking to help others achieve their ultra running goals. You need some help? You need some guidance? You need somebody to tell you how far to run and how fast to run it? Check out our experienced coaches at Run the Riot Coaching.
I'm here. We're back.
We live out in the country, so our high-speed internet is a little bit fickle sometimes.
It's questionable. All right. I'll be able to fix it up once we're done. Mike, you're 66 years old, huh?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Which is great. Like I have to ask, like, okay, so you've been doing all these races and stuff. You're getting a little bit older now. How do you stay pretty much injury free? Like, how do you keep doing this?
Pretty lucky on the injury side. I mean, all the time, little nagging things going on, but nothing that's taken me out of a race in particular. And I think one key, David, for me is that I certainly don't follow a rigid training regimen, like a lot of people that do it the right way and really focus on some target races during the year and got a training block building up to it. I think I've heard more over the years just talking to other 100-mile races, at least, about injuries that occur due to training volume and intensity as opposed to maybe just getting out there and doing a race. It seems like the injuries are occurring during the training for the most part. And I'm just kind of recovering from a race or tapering for the next race. So there's not a whole lot of training that goes on there.
Well, I was about to say, when you've done 4 100 milers in 5 weeks, you just kind of recover and do the next.
Yeah, not a whole lot of running in between. So therefore, I think I've been lucky. Just to get back to the injury question, less mileage for me has resulted in probably less injury.
Okay. Have you do you do any kind of cross training, stretching, or anything like that?
I've always, even before got into the running really regularly, always gone to the gym, usually 3 days a week in the gym.
Yeah.
And there was a point in time where I was trying to do some Ironman races, so I would do some biking and some swimming for those, but really haven't done any of that since I finished the last Ironman. So not a lot of cross training in there other than the gym. I do a lot of weight work in the gym.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I believe in that. And I enjoy doing work at the gym and trying to keep my body strong, you know, and yes. I try to keep at least 2 or 3 days a week, and it's served me pretty well so far. And, you know, I keep everything together because we don't want to tear it down too bad.
Well, I would caution anybody that's thinking about ultras, in particular, mountain ultras out west. Think about your upper body. Think about your back when you're running downhill. When you're using trekking poles, all that comes into play, your upper body strength. You know, I've seen some folks with some really bad back issues during 100 milers just because of the ups and downs and the pounding that you take out there.
Have you ever finished one with the lean?
Oh, yeah. Big time. A couple of years ago at Bighorn, they thought about even pulling me from the race. There was a little discussion in an aid station that I just managed to get out of before they could make a decision.
Anyway, where is he? He's all crooked down the trail.
Exactly. Luckily, it was the last aid station before the finish, but I've certainly had that lean and never exactly sure anybody's ever pinpointed the cause. I've heard it's electrolytes, but I think muscle issues and back strength can have something to do with it too.
I felt it for one of my hundreds. I started feeling it, and it was the weird. And I noticed it, and it was the weirdest thing. Like in my brain, I'm like, straighten up, but it wouldn't do. And I had done less core work and stuff before that one, and so like I just made sure afterwards. So I figured it was weak core, weak back. You know, it which makes sense to me, but. But it's the weirdest thing. Like you just can't. Yep.
I couldn't pinpoint anything in particular in those races where I've had it occur, whether it was hydration or electrolytes. Yeah. But I agree that if you've got a stronger back and a stronger core, it's got to help offset some of that.
So I just want to make sure we put a pin in this for all you guys that are out there running. Listen, you know, Mike's been out there. He's run so many, you know, ultras, all these terrains, and he's 66 and he's still going. He's in the gym 3 days a week. So just remember that. That's important. It's an important thing. I think, you know, we like to run, so we run, but you got to keep everything strong. So I just remember that. That's really important.
The balance.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let me check my notes here real quick. Cause I have some notes, and then we've got to go to the listener questions. Cause I have a few, even Edie has one about something you mentioned earlier. That's going to be pretty good. Let's see. We talked about injuries. We talked about training, cross training. Oh, this isn't on the list, but I noticed that you go back to Hawaii really often. Now, is that you or Sandra?
Well, it probably was a little bit of both. When I first started going out for hurt, I would go out by myself. And I'm not sure when you started going, but at some point, not only did she go, but she actually works the kitchen there at at the Nature Center. So I think they only let me in the race now because they want her to come work.
Hey, do what you got to do.
Yeah, it was a race that took me at least 5 or 6 times before I finished the 100. They used to give us a 100K finish there, so they don't do that anymore. You have to finish the 100-miler to get a finish, but it was a little too easy to take that 100K finish sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's a great race again.
Yeah.
Changed the race directors over the years there, and John and PJ just started a great event there, and John unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but the volunteers out there, not just because my wife happens to be one of them, but the volunteers do a great job. It's a really tough 20-mile loop, especially when you're going there in January, and it's hot, it's humid, it's basically the jungle, it's mud, it's roots like you are probably never going to run through anywhere else. Literally, where you can't put a foot down between the roots, they're so close together. But it's just the kind of thing. I think I've done it 18 times now.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that many times. That's wild. Yeah,
well, we should say out of that 18, David, there's only 6 finishes. This year, I made it to 92 miles, I think, and missed the cutoff there. So it's a race I love to hate.
Yeah. So I lived on the island for a year, and I got to hike some of those trails, and that was before I was just doing marathons then. And so when I found out there was a race on there, cause I've hiked them, I know the exact route you're talking about and when they get slick with mud, and I had trouble hiking those things when I found out there was a 100-miler on it. And this past year, a runner I coach, Austin, he went out and he finished it, and I was tracking you too, on the race. And, I mean, I don't know. It's, they call it the HURT. I know it stands for Hawaii Ultra Running Team, but that's a hard race, man.
Well, I would tell you, if you know those trails, go back out there.
Well,
see if
I can convince the wife to go to Hawaii.
I want somebody to share the misery with me, you know?
All right. We'll have to look into that, because I would love to be miserable in Hawaii again.
So it's a great group of people, and they put on a great race. That's why it's so popular.
Yeah, I love the spirit out there. Just the people in Hawaii already, but from what I've seen and people I've talked to, the whole race, it's like it's Ohana, it's family, it's Ohana. You know, it's beautiful. So, I keep going back, man. Hopefully I can make a trip. I'm gonna mention that to the wife after this again. Just kind of keep putting.
Just ask her if she wants to go to Hawaii in January.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens.
She's probably smart enough to know there's a race behind that question.
Oh, yeah. She'll know. She'll know. She'll know exactly what it is. Looking at all the questions I have, I think I covered all of my main things, but I want to make sure before I get to the listener questions, I want to make sure and talk about your book a little bit more, Sandra. So what is the name of the book?
Crewing for an Ultra Run, Start to Finish.
Nice. So when did you decide to write this book, and how long did it take?
You know, over the years, I've had a number of people that I talk to while I'm crewing and say, oh, let me tell you what I do in this situation, or let me show you how to recalculate your runner's pace. And I've had somebody say, oh, you should write a book. And, you know, I just really didn't have time, because if I'm going to do a book, I really want to put together, you know, something I'm going to be proud of.
Yeah.
And it took until COVID for me to go, okay, I got some time on my hands now, because we weren't traveling.
Yeah.
So one of my girlfriends and I, there's a couple of these remote cabins, Forest Service cabins up in Colorado. We like to go out there and stay and hike and spend a few days out in the middle of nowhere with no cell service. So I took a spiral notebook and a pencil and just made this furious outline of everything that I wanted to put in there. And I think the first typed version of it was like 60 pages. And then I would think, oh, I got to talk about this. And then I decided, I was telling someone, you know, one of the funny stories. It's like, I think it would be fun to throw in these funny stories and also some not so funny stories.
Yeah.
And then there's some gear that I just really like to use when I'm crewing. So I, you know, threw in a section about gear. So once I added stories and gear and pro tips and, you know, some other things, I think the final version is 130 pages. So I basically doubled it. But I just kept, you know, I'd write it and I'd edit it. And then I'd take it to a race with me and go, I forgot to put this in it. And then my last little litmus test, I gave it to two of my friends who have nothing to do with the ultra running community.
Yeah.
I said, okay, let's pretend Mike just said, I need you to crew this run for me. You know nothing. Will this book get you there?
Hmm.
And they gave me great feedback. So, you know, one example is my girlfriend Penelope said, I had to read for a while to figure out what a drop bag was. I've never even heard that term before.
Wow. Yeah.
And then my friend Charles, his input was, you know, there's a lot of detail in this book. I went, yeah, that was the point. And he said, but, you know, some people may not want to read all the detail. So maybe have like cliff notes at the front of each section. So he had, you know, a bullet list of suggestions about it. And the last thing was, by the way, I don't ever want to crew an ultra run after reading.
That's good. Tell Mike he's on his own if he needs it.
Yep. So I had the time to really think about it and put it together and I just enjoyed it. You know, I had fun putting it together and I love the print version. I did it in a print version, a paperback, like 8.5 by 11 paperback and a Kindle version. But to me, the print version that you can take out to a race with you, there's places for notes and, you know, that book is about how I have learned to crew and the things that I consider. But, you know, Mike is a like middle to back of the pack runner. If you're crewing for the number one and two runners, you probably have a different strategy, but a lot of those tips can help you if you've never crewed before. So the paperback version that you can take out like a field manual, I really like that one.
Yeah. So for people that want to check out the book, where can they get it?
On Amazon.
Okay.
I've written one other book and on that one I published it on a variety of platforms. And what I found in the end was it was a lot of expense for other platforms where it just didn't move. You know, Amazon seems to be the king of books.
Yeah.
So Amazon.
Cool. And now I'll look it up and make sure and have the link in the show notes for people to check it out. That'll be good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, that's good because that is part of, you know, even as a coach, you know, I want to make sure, you know, when I'm talking people through logistics and all those things, it sounds like you end up like, and for the runner, you know, their logistics, and I'm also trying to get them to get their crew prepared. And cause that's what I do. I do a lot of I hand my wife a binder, like, here's all your stuff, you know, how to get places and all, cause I don't want her to get lost. And so this, I'm going to read your book because I want to, you know, like get tips to help my wife and get her ready. She probably won't read it, but I can tell her what it says. You know, Sandra says this, do this.
I want to take it out to the aid station when she's waiting for you to give her something to read.
There you go. Exactly. To hear something to do. So,
but you know, there's some really good tips in there. There was a lady at one of the Louisiana, actually at Lugaroo, who said, you know, just the tip on how to get compression sleeves off is worth the price of the book, you know?
Oh,
so
that's cool.
You find little tips in there. You go, hey, I never thought of that. You know,
I know I've struggled and my wife has struggled doing that. So I have to read the book to get the tip. I could ask you now and to give it to the people, but maybe they just need to get
ruin
the book.
The surprise.
Yeah. I don't want to ruin the surprise, but I want to know.
Effective and very easy.
Okay.
Page
109. That's great. Maybe I'm going to read the book anyway. So when we quit recording, I'll ask.
Okay.
So I have some questions from people that listen to the podcast. And so one of them is, you know, and it's the first time I've done this. I put out, and I meant to do it earlier. I said, hey, I'm going to be interviewing Mike and Sandra Smith in an hour and a half. So what you got? And the first question is, it's Edie. So here's the question, Mike. Do you eat McDonald's during your everyday life or just when you're running 100?
Just when I'm running 100.
Okay, because then Fawn, another race director for, of Red Dirt, you know Fawn too. Those are my people, man. she put, at this point, I think his everyday life is running 100 miles.
Come back.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So do you not... Good question, though. Do you normally eat pretty healthy?
We try.
Okay, that's good.
It includes no fast food except for races.
Yeah, if you saw what I ate during a race, I mean, I should be sponsored by Little Debbie, I think, sometime.
Dude, that's a lot of calories. It's a way to get a lot of calories quick, man.
Oh, yeah. So I don't eat anything like what I usually eat during an ultra.
Or
just preparing for an ultra.
Yeah, which Little Debbies do it for you? Which ones are your favorites?
Oh gosh, the oatmeal cakes are great. Oh, oatmeal pies.
They're soft and they go down good, huh?
Yeah, if it's not a hot race, I do the Nutty Buddy bars, the peanut chocolate bars.
Yeah, I like those.
Done the donut, the square donut. I don't know exactly the name of those square donuts. The coffee.
No, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And what else, Little Debbie?
I think that's all Little Debbie.
She had me try the oatmeal pies that have peanut butter in them. I don't see those anymore.
They still make them. They're one Little Debbie oatmeal peanut butter pie has 390 calories in it.
What?
Yeah.
Yep. I haven't seen those.
At Christmas, I'll do the little Christmas cakes.
You got to celebrate. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, he could be sponsored by Little Debbie's and Milo's Sweet Tea.
Oh, so Milo's Sweet Tea. All right. We have one of those plants like a few miles from my house where they make Milo's Sweet Tea here.
Really?
Yeah, just north of Tulsa. My
go-to. We always have a jug of Milo's. I'll tell people, you can keep your Gatorade and all the other energy drinks that you do and electrolyte drinks. Just give me some sweet tea.
So you do sweet tea, but do you do like salt tablets and stuff sometime too to get the salt? Okay.
I do.
Is that how you get your electrolytes mainly?
Mainly the salt stick, electrolyte tabs, and the I do sports legs. I think they have less sodium and some other things in them. But I'll try to work those in on occasion. But definitely get more electrolytes that way probably. And I'll eat some salty food, but more electrolytes just that way.
I
don't drink anything but water.
Okay.
And when I'm at the aid station and Sandra's there, I'll drink the sweet tea.
Okay. Well, while we're talking the trash we eat at during ultras, have you ever tried Rice Krispie treats?
Yes. Rice Krispie treats. I used to do a lot of those and was just looking for something a little more dense. You know, they're kind of bulky
for
the
true.
Calories you get there. So I was looking for, I'm all the time looking for the smallest calorie dense thing that I can get.
You know, like a double stuffed Oreo, I think has over 100 calories per cookie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Serious.
Oh yeah. You got to look at double stuffed.
Read those nutrition labels.
Vanilla double stuffed Oreos in particular, I like. Can't do a whole lot of the chocolate ones, but vanilla. And then
Nutter butter cookies.
You can get Nutter butter cookies that are two times the filling in them.
It's great.
Vienna fingers, anything like that. You look in our pantry, and other than having some left over from a race that I'll take to the next race, I won't have those in the house.
Yeah. That's funny. So I had when this one airs, it'll be two podcasts ago. I had a nutritionist, and she's probably going to be, oh my God. you gotta get calories. You gotta do it.
Well, yeah, our favorite that she can bring me out if there's one around is a KFC chicken pot pie.
Oh.
And you talk about a lot of calories.
It's like 800 calories.
Protein, fat.
All right.
Get one of those down. I'm good for another 20 miles.
Nice. You ever tried the like Starbucks Frappuccinos?
You know, I don't do coffee, but I will do the, and I say I don't do coffee on a rare occasion. In fact, Mississippi, I think I had a half a cup of coffee out there, but I do carry they're not no-dos. I think they're the Jet Alert the caffeine pills.
Okay, you do caffeine.
I'll break one of those in half and can't take a whole one at a time, but I can take a half a caffeine pill. That's what I'll do when I'm really dragging at night.
Okay. Well, I do the fraps because they have about 290 calories, and then of course the caffeine boost, and it goes down really smooth. So it's usually pretty good.
Try if you're looking for the caffeine, try the sweet tea too.
Okay. All right. Milo's.
That's a big sugar and caffeine boost.
Nice. I'm from South Louisiana, man. I like sweet tea, man. Yeah. That's good stuff. Right. So, all right. I'm going to put that on my list. Things to try. All right. Let's see what other questions we've got here. I had Mark. A lot of people said they're looking forward to it. Oh, so Walter Handloser, I'm sure you've run with him. You know, he had the record for the most 100-milers in a year. He put, I'd like to know from both Sandra and Mike's perspectives what they consider the most key crewing tip for hundreds. I know Sandra wrote a whole book on the subject, so her knowledge is encyclopedic. Is that a word? But he said, you know, so what if you had to give somebody one tip, what is the top one, Sandra?
Planning.
Okay.
You got to have a plan.
All right.
So I think all the other skills just kind of fall apart if you don't have a plan to work from. And then once you have a good plan, of course, our plan is always based on a pace chart. Michael asked me, what are we going to do with this or at this time? It's like, give me the pace chart and I'll talk to you. I'm not talking to you until I have a pace chart. And so my plan all goes on a pace chart. And then being flexible and resilient when things go wrong, or it may not even be that they went wrong, you know, like in the case where he comes in, you know, an hour early than I expect him, you know, little things like, okay, now I need to recalculate his next arrival time. And how does that affect my plan? So to me, the number one thing is having a good plan and knowing how to work that plan as the race goes on.
Nice.
I would tell you, David, it's probably a crew that can maintain a positive attitude through their challenges and through the runners' challenges, because as you said earlier, sometimes we come in with not the best attitude, and you don't want a crew adding to that and they'll spiral down from there. I would say a crew that's just consistent in their demeanor and performing and getting you in there and out of that aid station and whatever it takes to do that, and not complaining about how long they had to drive to get to the aid station or the fact that they don't particularly like that food that they just brought to you. They just work through all that, understanding that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
As a runner, you're kind of in those ups and downs anyway, and the last thing you want is a crew bringing you down.
Yeah.
That's an interesting perspective I never really thought about. So for me, without a plan, all that doesn't matter. But what matters to him is demeanor and and all that. That's an interesting difference in perspective there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Since we both know Edie, I'm going to use Edie as an example here. When I was running, when it became the Loup Garou, I was running it, and at the end of my first loop, and you're talking about how perspective and people can affect you. That first loop, it was about my 19. I turned my ankle on a root really bad. Like I felt it pop, and you know how you kind of turn it, and then you can kind of take a few steps with a limp, and then you get back on it. Well, I kept limping. I kept limping, and I was like, oh man. And so I kept going, and I turned it again, and it was bad. And I was like, oh man, this is it's a rooty trail. It has a lot of rough sections. And so I came into that main aid station, and Edie was there doing something or whatever. And I said, Edie, she said, what's up, Terrio? I said, oh man, I turned my ankle really bad. And she didn't give me pity. She said, don't take your shoe off. It'll swell and you won't be able to get it back on. And I was like, I guess I'm still going to keep running.
Choice.
And I was able to figure out how to keep running without turning it. And it was nasty, but I got it done. So I knew I couldn't damage it any further or anything like that. But if she would have said, oh, sit down, let me look at it, because I felt it swelling and all that. If she'd have babied me, I probably wouldn't have finished that race, you know? So
it's a great point, David. And in all seriousness, there's a lot of better runners out there than me that don't finish races. And it's because a lot of times they talk themselves out of it.
Yeah,
they just hit that low spot and they won't work through it. They roll that ankle and they won't work through it. You know, they let everything become much more of a problem than it really needs to be.
Mm, yeah.
And you just, they need to be, and you said you're coaching people. I'm sure you're preparing them for those low spots and telling them there's going to be times that no matter how well trained you are, no matter how well you hydrated or ate or anything else, the weather's bad, it's muddy, it's water, it's whatever it is. You got lost for a little bit and you're worried about cutoffs. Whatever it is, you just work through it because it's a long distance. And usually, unless you're really chasing a cutoff, you've got the time to figure it out and work through it. But you got to have the mental perspective to really do that. That, you know, I tell people you can condition a lot of muscles, but the most important one is between your ears.
100%.
If that one's not in shape, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's great advice. That's solid. So I'm going to ask you, because you've run so many races. Now, I've pretty much every 100 miler or above that I've run, I have hit low spots where I basically questioned what I'm doing and why am I doing it and why am I out here? This is stupid. Do you, after all these hundreds, does that still happen to you sometime?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You're wondering, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're by yourself out there and you're sleepwalking and you're trying to figure out, okay, you know, I think I got a buckle or two already. Do I need another one? And you're really just beginning to question life in general. And, you know, to me, that's some of why I do it. I like the fact that we challenge ourselves to do hard things. And I think if we taught our kids anything, it would be, don't be afraid to try hard things, and you're going to fail at some of them, but keep trying, keep trying. And I like, you know, why do I go back to Hawaii? Well, you know what? I like the challenge out there and trying to finish that. And I definitely feel better when I'm able to finish, but you know, I'll go back. You know, it's tough things that you like to try to do and feel better about having done them when you're through.
I told him recently, you know, we're old now. Why don't you pick easier races?
That's right. That's right. So Mike, I'm both encouraged by that even after I've done quite a few hundreds and all, I'm like, man, I should be getting used to this by now. But I'm also like, well, I guess it's never going to end, you know? So if Mike's still having that after, you know, over 200 races, I'm like, oh, well, I guess just have to suck it up.
But that's part of what you learn to enjoy too, I guess, is the message.
Yeah.
In the moment, it might not feel like it, but just think of what it's going to be like when you get through going through that neck deep water and you're able to tell that story afterwards that, gosh, I'll remember that race forever.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I love it. I love it. Well, here's, let's see. I did. So this is from Nicole Lofton, who just broke Ann Trason's record at the Arkansas Traveler 100. She's, she's been on the podcast a few times. Yeah. She's fantastic. So she asked, I guess this is for Sandra. Did she ever consider just saying, nah, I'm gonna sit this one out?
I not only have I considered it, I do it.
Okay, you know? All right.
Every once in a while, there's a race that it's so well provisioned and so well staffed with volunteers, and he doesn't have to drive far from the finish line to the hotel, that I go, oh, see you when you get back.
Yeah, you got this.
So yeah. And like he said earlier, he's got a really good community of friend boys and who love to come pace and run and crew for him. So, you know, every once in a while it'll be, you know, a guy's trip, you know, we're all going to Montana to Crazy Mountains. It's like, good. See you later. You
know? Peace out. I'm going to read a book.
Yeah, I do sit them out.
Yeah.
And she has some other hobbies that she likes to do. So
yeah, I have to get stuff on my calendar too.
She likes to go out and camp all night. I like to go out and run all night. So.
Yes. I thought that was pretty funny when you said that, you know, I like to camp. Mike doesn't. I'm like, what? Wait, what?
When I started backpacking, I tried to get him to backpack with me, and he looked at me and said, I'd rather run all night long than sleep in the woods. It's like, what? So we have some hobbies that we do not share.
There's some overlap, but yeah, that's funny. No, that's good. That's healthy because, you know, you do the things together and you know, you do that. Sandra, have you ever run a race?
The most I've ever done is a half marathon, and he tricked me into it. He said, "Oh, everyone else's wives are coming. There's no cutoff." Well, there was, and I didn't train because I knew I could walk it. You know, no worries on that. So I think I've done maybe 3 half marathons, but I consider them social events, not running.
Nice.
Events.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't like running. I'd rather hike, backpack, but running doesn't feel good to me.
Okay. Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
One of those was a Mardi Gras half marathon down in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That's cool. I've done that marathon before. It's good stuff. Yeah. Well, I got another one here. Kevin Griffin, this is a more practical one. How do they discuss A goals, B goals, and C goals before, during, and after the race? So, how does that work out?
Well, Mike only has A goals. He's going to go finish the race. So B and C will come. You know, we don't really, the only thing that we've ever really planned ahead is Mike knowing that if I don't show up at an aid station, just keep going. You know, something's going wrong with my routine, whether I'm, you know, lost, delayed, whatever.
Flat tire.
Okay.
You know, stuck in the mud. if I miss 2 aid stations, it doesn't really matter how many aid stations I miss. If I haven't been able to get myself out of the situation, he's not going to be able to get out of a race and figure out where I am and deal with it. So the biggest thing with our planning is don't worry about me. I'm pretty self-sufficient. If I'm missing an action, worry about it at the end of the race. Everything else comes up during a race. If he's running ahead of time, if he's running behind, if he's really chasing cutoffs, if his stomach is sick, and the things that I've brought, you know, I have driven ridiculous amount of miles to go get something he wants, just to watch him spit it out on the ground, and you just want to go, I want to kill you right now. I'm going to keep a smile on my face. Yeah. So it's all those little things that go wrong that or get off track, and we have a pretty good routine of talking about those while he's in the aid station. We don't do I have my master plan, which is my pace chart with all the data that I have on it. Beyond that, it's just what happens during the race. And, you know, I might say, we had planned on me bringing you food for this next time, but what I figured out is that I really can't get to town and get back. So, we're going to do this instead. So it's a running dialogue with us, pun intended.
I think I would just add that she's right. I don't have prioritized goals. So finishing is the number one goal when you're mid to back of the pack runner like I am.
Yeah.
Any finish is a good finish.
Yeah. Well, I figured you were going to say something like that because my wife knows, like, when, you know, I give her a pace chart with different paces, possibilities, and sometimes we throw all 3 of those options out the window. You know, it just, sometimes I'm faster, sometimes I'm slower, and we just, like you said, recalculate and move forward, and we'll see what happens. And usually ends up, I start way too fast and then blow up at the end.
That's common mistake. I've been there.
Yeah. I'm going to PR this. No, I'm not. So those are the big questions that I've had on there, but I have another question that I thought of because Mike, with the way that you run, and you said you like to eat real food and all that, and you're doing all these hundreds. I didn't comb it because there's so many lines, but have you thought about doing a 200 miler?
Just long enough for somebody to tell me they would definitely not be out there with crew to.
That would be a boy trip.
Okay, so for those of you listening, Sandra's just shaking her head no.
We've done some, probably the longest distance, other than Badwater. We run Baton Rouge to New Orleans on the levee.
Oh, you've done the Rouge Orleans, huh?
Not the Rouge Orleans, not the race, but we would get a group together and just do it kind of off the cuff. So,
Did Edie, did you do it when Edie and them did that once?
Edie and I never coordinated a year where we could do it together. Sullivan.
So Jerry, that's who I was trying to jump in one year with Jerry and then the Great Mississippi River.
That's what we did.
Okay.
Sam Landry, Jerry.
Yes. That's a great group of us. Oh, man.
I've still got some of those buckles if you're ready to do it.
So I did it when the last year for Rouge Orleans, 2015, I did it. And it was my second race of 100 miles or more. And that was definitely something. It was I hallucinated for the first time during that one. So, but that would I am interested. So yeah, Walker was going to do he did the voodoo one year, but then it's hard to get permitting and stuff to do a full-blown race. So I guess a group of people can just jump on there and run, though.
Exactly. I think that's the better way to do it. Just kind of a badass thing.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, you let me know if you're going to plan on doing one, or maybe I'll reach out to you and we may just have to plan something like that. I would like to do that again.
We'd have to get Edie and crew together and see if we couldn't get a group interested.
I bet we could. And so, Edie, I know you're going to be listening to this. Let's do it. All right. Well, guys, I thank you so much. I know we're on the edge of time here. Thank you so much. It's been great. I'm glad we could work out a time. Mike, you inspire me with all that you've done. And I know that you couldn't have done all that you've done without the pretty lady sitting next to you. And so you guys seem to just make a fantastic team. And that's awesome. And I guess my last question will be, Mike, when are you going to quit running 100 miles?
Well, when it really stops being fun.
All right. Well,
it's still fun. I still enjoy it.
Well, I hope we do another podcast 5 years from now and you're still doing it. And, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 even, you know, let's just keep trucking, man.
We'll be having to talk about your first 100 then.
All right. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Gotta convince my wife. Gotta talk to my wife. If we could convince her, I'd be in.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she heard me. she just said, shut up. Well, you guys, it's been a pleasure. And I'm sure I will see you at Mace's Hideout. I'm planning on doing that.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't done it yet. And so I'm doing that one before I do High Lonesome the next month. And so I am looking forward. Maybe we can share some miles, brother.
Sounds good.